The death of God is about the drying up of a horizon of meaning and of a whole form of human life.
Where do we stand in the illusion it makes? What kind of space are we invited into?
The material relations between people become social relations between things. When we look at toasters, corn, and TVs,
to a large extent, live in the interregnum between worlds, if you will, or between paradigms. Not many people in the history of the world have faced that.
Zero Squared is the Zero Books podcast.
Martin Fredrickson is the author of the book An Anthropology of Nothing in Particular, which came out from Zero Books in August of last year. And he's the guest this week as we discuss the group of nihilists he studied and their commitment to, well, nothing. It's Wednesday, January 23rd, 2019, and I'm Douglas Lane, the publisher of Zero Books and the host of this podcast. If you're listening to this through our Patreon feed, you'll hear about an hour conversation between Martin and me. You'll hear me try to pin him down about just what these nihilists and their commitment to nothing means. And you'll hear his continued insistence that they don't have any meaning at all. If you're listening through our regular feed on Podomatic or Blueberry, you'll hear about a 10-minute excerpt. Patreon subscribers get access to two podcasts every week, Symptomatic Redness and Zero Squared. And if you're listening free, you'll get access to one or the other podcast every week. I hope you enjoy them. The music you're listening to right now is an 8-bit version of the Garbage song, I'm Only Happy When It Rains. But in just a moment, you'll be listening to Martin Fredrickson and I discuss the meaning of nothing. Let's talk about your book. It's called An Anthropology of Nothing in Particular. And reading it, one thing that I wanted to ask you right off the bat is it a story of these nihilists?
I would say that first and foremost, it's an invitation to think about nothingness in the shape of a story. So, I mean, you can read it as a story, although it's a somewhat disrupted narrative that you have to that you have to go through. But it certainly also have an aspect of critique. I mean, it originated basically as a self-critique or as an obstruction that was given to me that I kind of became intrigued by, in the sense of critiquing what I had been doing myself in my previous research in terms of both writing and theorizing. And ways of writing and theorizing that I felt were relatively common, I mean, within my own field of anthropology, but also in a sense in the social sciences more general.
What was it about encountering the nothingness of the nihilists that set you on your heels when it came to your own practices as an anthropologist? What did you have to question?
Well, it originated from one of them having read a book I had previously written, also about a group of young people in Georgia, a group of unemployed young men who were engaged in various forms of criminal activity, and who also really didn't do anything, but I mean, they didn't have anything to do, but they wanted to do something. They wanted to create lives for themselves, and the first thing I was told was why I always, or what I was asked was why I always had to kind of cram meaning into everything, in terms of having described situations where nothing really happened and where people actually themselves describe their lives as being meaningless. I mean, I would immediately take the next step of analytically trying to provide some kind of meaning to that kind of social life. So it, I mean, this book more or less originated as a question of me being asked what I would do if I actually took that kind of meaninglessness seriously and left it to be meaningless, or actually engaged in these different kinds of nothingness that the nihilist, at least, believed existed in their lives. So I was invited into this world and given the task of trying to write about it and analyze it in ways that I hadn't done before.
What kind of meaning would you impose upon people's meaningless lives in the past?
Well, I would turn to whatever theory I knew of that could somehow create a backdrop, for instance, that would explain how this had come to be, or what kind of particular societal situations that created these situations, or describing boredom, for instance, as something that was, in a sense, originating from a loss of meaning and not being meaningless in itself. But I would always try to, how can you say, to weave it into an aspect of saying, I mean, this might stand forth as meaningless, but there is some kind of meaning to it in the end.
Well, it seems like to me that one of the purposes of community or society is to create collective meaning for people's lives, and in order to, you know, reproduce itself, that you are born into a different set community, and you will then be given the task as you get older of discovering the meaning that is for you in that world. And maybe when you encounter people who are bored or who don't find their lives to be meaningful, what you're encountering is sort of perceived to be a failure when you're looking at it from the point of view of the establishment, from the point of view of the society and its norms.
And I think, I mean, part of the nihilism that I try to describe is exactly an attempt to disengage from particular kinds of societal norms, and for people being able to in a sense shred off the things that society impose on them, be it religion or age or gender or sexuality or the job you have or the education you have, but actually being able to sit in a room together and just be as yourself. But I think what you're also pointing to is a basic problematic or a challenge in nihilism, in the sense that it cannot actually exist, or what you would call the nihilist paradox, because if you declare yourself to be a nihilist, then you've declared something, which in a sense goes against the grain of what you're supposed to do. So it's like Fight Club. I mean, the first rule of nihilism is don't talk about nihilism.
Right.
Because there is there is a world outside, and they also recognize that, I mean, when you open the door, there is a social world that meets you.
Well, you know, right before this conversation started, I was talking to another author, Liam Mitchell, who wrote a book about video games, but he wrote a book also about Heidegger. You know, Heidegger is the philosopher of meaning, I think, or one of the philosophers of meaning. And he was very concerned about the way that modern societies instrumentalize people's lives and use a calculative reasoning that will ultimately destroy what should be foundational meanings for peoples, so that that it's modernity, according to Heidegger, that sets up nihilism, and that the problem with our societies today is precisely that they don't have the ability to create meaning.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the political landscape today, or if Heidegger looked at the political landscape today, he would find an affirmation of many of his thoughts, because you can see traces, I would say, of more of the political nihilism certainly at stake in many places of the world, where people disengage from politics, or where politics, in a sense, has become what Katrine Gottfredsen and I talk about in our previous book on the Rose Revolution and the afterlives of revolution as a kind of forms without content, where there isn't really anything. I mean, the meaning that people expect from society is somehow not there.
Right. Do you believe that this condition is caused by modernity, or do you think that it is a trans-historical condition?
I don't think it's created by modernity. I think there's certainly a heightened sense of it in modern times. But I think the way people have related to the question of meaning, which is also, I mean, what Heidegger describes, is something that has roots far beyond or much further back than that, and that this relation between nothingness and something or somethingness is something that people have always considered, and actually is something that forms the basis of how we perceive ourselves. Not as oppositions, but as something that is concomitant. I mean, the nothingness and the somethingness.
Well, Heidegger's really interesting because he is so focused on finitude and on nothingness. And yet he is also aiming at developing a philosophy of rootedness and contemplation and meaning. He believes that it's only when we risk maybe nihilism, but certainly our own selves, and risk becoming nothing, maybe, and accept that that is not only a risk but a certainty that we will become nothing, that we can, in that moment, by being in the world and engaging it in a meditative way and in a way that strives after excellence, then we will be able to experience and more to the point, live through a meaningful life. The nihilists would, I think, oppose this aim.
Well, in a sense, they would and they wouldn't. I mean, Heidegger certainly has, as you says, this obsession with finitude, and says that, I mean, the reason why we are aware of ourselves is because of our awareness of nothing, of our own annihilation, and that it's this angst or this fear of nothing that actually creates something for us, that creates the self-awareness that Dasein is. So I mean, his question of why is there something instead of nothing ends up with an answer being there is something because of nothing. I mean, there couldn't be something without our idea of finitude and our idea of having to do something with our lives. I think to some extent the nihilists would follow him for the first part of that argument in the realization that nothingness is. But that this movement through somethingness will not change that. That nothingness, I mean, nothingness will still kind of take center stage.
There's a book by one of my favorite philosophers. His name is Zizek. You probably know him. Yeah. And he wrote Less Than Nothing. And his... I think of him as definitely an enemy of Heidegger, like, or that he would think of Heidegger as an enemy. And what's interesting is how often Zizek will make the point that he does not believe that there is a substantial nothingness, that there's a mystical substance of nothing that we should strive to embrace, that he believes that there is a gap that is virtual. Sometimes he'll say that kind of thing, or he'll talk about parallaxes. I think that a lot hinges, actually, strangely enough, on how you relate to nothingness and how you instantiate nothingness or substantialize nothingness in your philosophy. If you end up embracing nothingness as a kind of substitute God or a force that can be described in a positive sense, then you often end up like Heidegger, which is on the right. And if you hold on to nothingness as something more like what Zizek describes as a gap or a structural necessity for positive life that has no significance of its own, which is not a substance, you may end up on the left, as Zizek does.
Mm. Yeah. And I think nihilism would somehow disagree with both of them. I mean, I think nihilists would say you're both taking nothingness too seriously. I mean, nothingness shouldn't be valued higher than anything else.
In a wonderful short scene, the heroine of Blue, after returning home, finds there on the floor a group of newly born mice crawling around their mother. This scene terrifies her. She is too excessively exposed to life in its brutal meaninglessness. What she is able to do at the end is to acquire a proper distance towards reality. This is what happens in the famous circular shot where we pass from Julie's face while she is making love. This magical suspension of temporal and spatial limitations, this free floating in a fantasy space, far from distancing us from reality, enables us to approach reality. She is putting together the coordinates which enable her to experience her reality as meaningful again.